Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Well, good morning. I'm Michelle Matthews, and we're here for another show, Growth Matters, where we talk about all things growth. And we have two CEOs and entrepreneurs here today for our listeners, and I think you're really going to find our show quite interesting because they're in the area of technology, where technology and healthcare intersect. So we all know, given all that's going on in that space, there's just a lot to learn and a lot to bring forth. So our first guest is Baha Siddin. He is the CEO of Azalea Health, and Azalea Health is a leading provider in cloud-based electronic health record software, practice management software, and revenue cycle management services. So we're going to have to get into that so our listening audience can understand what all those are. But welcome, Baha.
Thank you very much.
And we also have with us Stuart Bracken. He is the CEO of Bioscape Digital. And Bioscape delivers interactive content through a dynamic platform that seamlessly integrates into clinical care settings, which allows patients to engage in their health while gathering valuable data for the provider. So, Stuart, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, as I said, both of you are very much in this healthcare technology space. And so, Baha, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what it means to be a cloud-based service provider in this space?
A cloud-based service provider allows their users, regardless of who the user is, if it's a patient or a provider or a healthcare provider or a clinician, to be able to log online and use the system from any web-enabled device at any time. And so it enables the scalability aspect of accessing their data and their software. And it makes it very convenient for them also where it's not tied to a specific hardware. We manage the server farm, and we manage actually the scalability of how many users we can have, thousands, millions of users, and scale it up easily. And at the same time, the user doesn't really need to worry about the back end, what's behind it, how many servers there is, or how much hardware they need. All they need is a web-enabled device.
Yeah, so before I let Stuart give us sort of his information about his organization, so I'm a patient, you know, kind of break this down for our listeners very simply. And so what would I have a need to interact with your software, or kind of give me the situation or an example of something I might do?
Well, Michelle, we're emphasizing in general for the healthcare right now to educate the patient on their health information. And health IT is playing a huge role in that. Now our patients are able to go online. There's a patient portal where they can look up and see all their lab results as they get released from the laboratory. They'll also be able to see their previous encounters with that physician. They'll allow themselves to schedule an appointment. And that piece of if patient engagement is very important, and that's where Stuart is going to be able to talk and elaborate more as well. But that's what we hope our patients be able to do.
That's a perfect segue. Stuart, tell us a little bit about Bioscape Digital and what it does.
Yeah, so what we're trying to do is solve really a simple problem that we see every day. And that is, if you're a patient that's sitting in a doctor's office or sitting in a hospital, a lot of times you have questions that you need answered, and maybe the nurse isn't there, or the doctor, unfortunately, because of the way the industry is going, is super busy. And so what we said is, what if you took a simple technology like a tablet and provided the relevant information in a timely manner to the patient? And so that's really where we see the problem that we're trying to solve. Let's engage the patient while they're in that clinic setting, so that when they go home and they receive those blood test results at home, they already know what they're looking for. They know what these numbers mean. And so that's really where we're focused.
So give me an example. You know, I have food allergies, so I'm always going to the allergist. So how might this be something that I might use?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a very good future channel for us. Maybe what I will do is tell you about an actual channel we have
today. Okay, perfect.
So women's imaging. breast imaging is a big issue that there's a lot of money spent on marketing and getting women into a imaging center to get a mammogram done on an annual basis. But there's a lot of anxiety about a mammogram. What does it mean for me? What happens if I get called back? What happens if I have a positive test result? And what we've done is put some content on a tablet, because now we know the woman's in the imaging center and we know that she has high levels of anxiety, and that can create a lot of stress in her life. And so our solution deals with that anxiety by helping them understand the reality of the situation and then the true probability of being diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, as an outcome of that, what we're able to do is also to deliver a lot of that information home so that then we can sign that woman up to take a look at this content when they go home. We also know that that woman might be of a good age to learn about heart health or other topics. And so what we really see is the imaging center in this case is the sort of the ability to first engage the patient and then deliver that follow-up message with them at home.
Yeah. So my background, both my parents are in the healthcare field. My father was a dentist and my mother was a nurse practitioner. So, you know, I've sort of been around healthcare all of my life. But I would imagine that both of you are really in an area where everybody is talking about this, but it's kind of hard to get our arms around it. So in such an emerging field, how do you help people get comfortable with this technology of, for example, Baha, the electronic health records, sure, and knowing that I can access it, but being uncomfortable about having that information electronically?
Well, fortunately, the financial world has done this ahead of the healthcare industry. So I get a lot of complaints sometimes from physicians. I don't want to use a computer for charting my information, but yet they go and exchange money using online transactions like TD Ameritrade or any stock platform, which to them is also just as valuable information. So the industry overall is moving forward, actually having patients and physicians use iPhones and smartphones. Got them the idea of, okay, I can be at ease more if using digital information, because they see the power of what this device does, what an iPhone or an iPad does for them. So that is actually removing the anxiety. Also, another aspect of it, the government realizes to reduce the overall healthcare costs, we have to get the patient engaged. We have to educate providers and patients of utilizing healthcare information technology, because it just does a lot of things where paper charts can't do. Data mining, you can't data mine a room full of paper charts, but you could data mine terabytes much easier than just one small room of charts. So that mentality is getting ingrained more and more in healthcare providers and patients. And now patients are well educated in this subject. They go and ask their provider, why are you not using a piece of technology that will enable me when I go home to be able to see what I have done or what my encounter with you was all about?
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so funny he mentioned that. I actually came from the financial services technology space as well. And it's something that 15 years ago we were working on full time, trying to get people to adopt the idea of real time management of their financial scenario, right? Checking your credit cards, understanding what your checking and banking accounts say, understanding what your credit score is. And it's very, you know, it's very parallel to the healthcare industry now.
Yeah. So, Baha, you were mentioning this whole idea of patient engagement and why it's important. And Stuart, it sounds like you're right there in the center of that. So talk to us a little bit about what are some of the challenges with this whole evolving space of patient engagement.
I mean, it is a massive challenge, but also where there's a massive challenge, I think there's a massive opportunity, which is why everybody's so excited about it. You know, for so long, I believe that the doctor was the ecosystem or the center of somebody's healthcare, that you know, they never really engaged themselves in their own healthcare. They would go to the doctor, and the doctor would say, take two and call me in the morning. And now what we're doing is we're putting more and more stress on the doctor to do all these requirements, and the doctor's being pushed in all these different directions. And so ultimately, we have to have the patient population, which is you and me and everybody listening, more engaged in their healthcare, or else the system's not going to improve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's switch gears a little bit. Both of you have done other ventures before you were involved in each of these organizations. So, Stuart, I read a little bit about your bio. You sort of label yourself a serial entrepreneur. Tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to the space and why you've decided to sort of take that serial entrepreneurship in this arena.
Yeah, so I really believe that there are a lot of lessons to be learned across different verticals or different industries. And oftentimes what you see the best companies do is they take lessons or they take advanced industries and look and say, hey, this model could work for us. And so really that's what I said here in healthcare. I said, look at the financial service industry. Look at the fact that they're delivering relevant and timely information to their population of customers. Look how much more powerful that is for a Target or a Walmart to understand who's in their shops and what they need. And I said to myself, well, doesn't that apply to healthcare? And actually, isn't it more important to apply that to healthcare? Because it's not just your money, but it's also your health at stake. And so that's really what I think a serial entrepreneur is good at, taking lessons learned from other industries and applying it to new businesses or new ventures.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about some of the other experiences that you've had and kind of how you got into the whole area of starting companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure if we have enough time for all of them, but I really started in college, started my first company when I was in college, ended up having about 60 employees, and we were in the IT field. So this is back in the 1990s, and everybody recognized that they needed a website with their company. And so what I said, what a great opportunity to give college-age students a skill set and some real-world experience while also driving value to all these different companies around the city I was in. And so that was my first venture into technology and into starting my own company. I knew absolutely nothing, but I loved it and lived it every day. And since then, I haven't really looked back.
Great. So, Baha, as I understand it, Azalea Health, I love the name.
Thank you.
It has a connection to where it's based out of. So
yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about what you did prior to starting Azalea, and tell us a little bit about the name.
Sure. Before we started Azalea Health, we were in a medical laboratory. So me and two other partners, co-founders, we saw the healthcare evolving to the electronic health records and automation. And we saw there is a need for cloud-based, easy-to-use, simplified solution where the provider and the healthcare user is not bogged down with complex systems. So we saw that opportunity in 2008 and started the company. And since then, the company has been founded in Valdosta, Georgia. We have an office in Savannah and an office in Macon, Georgia. We have also an we're looking to have a presence in Gainesville, Florida, for additional development resources. And since it started, it's been growing fast. We're growing about 55% year after year, and we're proud of our team and what we've accomplished in a small town, Valdosta.
I think that's a really great thing. If you think about it, it doesn't take a lot to move a needle and get the quality jobs into a smaller town. So I think that's something that I'm really impressed by.
Yeah, and both of you are your company is here in Atlanta, so you're Georgia-based companies. Talk to our listeners a little bit about why Georgia. Even if you lived here, you could have still chosen to go elsewhere. Technology, there's other areas where technology is a core. Why Georgia? Why Atlanta?
I think for me, the reality is the world is flat, but you need a launching off point, and Georgia is that. You know, as far as the airport system is concerned, there's no city or no client that I can't get to, just one plane flight away. And then you add to that the quality of resources from a human capital point of view, as far as Georgia Tech, Emory, Georgia is concerned, it doesn't really get much better than that. And so for me, it's a no-brainer.
I want to add to what Stuart mentioned. All of those are huge resources for any company. But I want to also add that the health IT industry in Atlanta has been growing fast, and I want to commend the Atlanta Chamber for recognizing that early on and being able to invest in different initiatives around the health IT, and Now Atlanta and Georgia is the health IT capital of the nation. So we're proud to be in Georgia, and we're proud to have a lot of relations in Atlanta and a lot of presence in Atlanta. And so it's been exciting.
That's a lot of good reasons to be here in Georgia. I'm curious, Baha, if any, are there challenges? So Stuart shared some things that are positive about a smaller community, sort of outside the perimeter of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular challenges that you face having the company in Valdosta?
Well, we do have a recruiting challenge sometimes and talent finding challenge. Being in a small town, it's very hard to find the quality programmers that we have. Seven programmers we call them the world best development team. They've developed a lot of great things, but being able to scale that has been a difficult challenge. That's why we're actually opening an office in Gainesville, Florida. And it's a challenge also for Atlanta. There's a huge need for technologists in Atlanta, specifically developers. Every company in Atlanta that I know of is facing that challenge, facing the challenge of finding quality programmers, recruiting them, and being able to retain them. And it's a major challenge that we've suffered because of the dot-com bubble. When it burst, it sort of kind of flattened the need for software development. And it's between 2001 and 2008, we didn't have a huge need and huge movement toward software engineers and software programmers. And now we're suffering from that gap. And I'm sure that's the case. I mean, I'll let Stuart elaborate on that, but I'm sure it's everywhere.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, I didn't know we would end up in the macro conversation, but I think you're right on point, and it goes to the higher education systems that we've got to continue to push students towards these type of majors and specialties to really get the quality young talent that we need.
Yeah, I would imagine, so speaking of talent, because clearly your people are, a huge asset, even though you're developing product, your people are key to what you're trying to do. So, Stuart, share with us a little bit about how you're developing the culture of the organization. So I'm, a hot talent out of Georgia Tech or out of my alma mater, Spelman. I can't not put my alma mater there. But, what is it about your organization? So I'm excited about the space, but what is it about your organization would make me really sit up and take notice and want to be a part of your team?
Yeah, first of all, let me say that I started listing off universities, and I thought, I'm in a rabbit hole here. I got about 25 universities I need to name.
Okay.
And so
it's all
the ones I left out, I apologize.
No problem.
For us, I think the excitement and the enthusiasm around what we're doing is really central to what makes it so exciting to work with Bioscape. It's the idea that you can really change the landscape, change the trajectory of healthcare on a macro level, but doing so just one day at a time. And I think that's something that we really got to focus on. And I am our biggest champion, but sometimes our biggest liability as well, because I will get so excited about the day-to-day operations of something, new release or new product or some sort of bug we have. And I got to keep telling everybody that the larger vision is what we really need to focus on. And as long as we focus on that, then ultimately we'll be successful and the culture around Bioscape will be a positive one to work in.
So when you're in that challenge, I always like to hear what leaders do to help their own insights and their own growth. So when you're in that path, what do you do so that you can sometimes pick your head back up and look at that bigger vision and lead?
Shut up and listen. That really is something that one of my old bosses, not the shut up part, but one of my old bosses used to sit back in a meeting and he'd be leading the meeting. And I would sort of observe the fact that he probably spoke less than anybody else in that meeting. And really what his job to do is sort of listen to all the different ideas and opinions and allow them to filter through his decision-making process. And I think sometimes as a leader, we get going a million miles per hour and we don't listen to the others within our organization. So that's really something I try to focus on.
Yeah, Baha, so what are some of the...
I want to add to that. It's especially for a lot of entrepreneurs who are passionate about that, what they do and what they want to do. I'm myself learning to shut up and listen every day, and it's quite interesting to see if you listen to your team, what would they bring to the table. It's always humbling to see what kind of ideas comes out of a very motivated, very energetic team, and and just being able to facilitate the decision making to support their. Their discussion is very key.
We could start a radio show. Shut up and listen.
That would be a great topic. That would be a great topic. You mentioned the word humble in your response, and I tell people all the time, if you really want to learn about yourself and have a mirror put in your face in terms of how well you're doing something or not. Become an entrepreneur, and as you said, listen to what your people have to say, because it forces you to grow. You have to, if you're not growing, then you're shrinking.
You're dying.
And you almost have to have, it's really hard to be an entrepreneur, because you really have to have almost this irrational obsession with making a successful company. And with that, that's sort of contradictory to this idea of listening to your employees and listening to your customers. You have to have this vision, but you have to balance that with the human element, right? And so that's not easy.
And especially in an industry like ours, it really constantly there's changes, there's regulations, there's additional information that we constantly have to absorb and innovate. And also, not just Azalea Health, but Stewart's Company. We're competing with giants. We're competing against companies that are publicly traded with billions of dollars in market cap. So you always have to think different. You have to approach the market differently, and you have to listen to your customers to be able to maneuver this industry.
Yeah. How do you stay abreast of what's emerging and what you need to know? You've got technology, which is very difficult to keep up with, and then you've got healthcare, and so the intersection of those two things is just going a mile a minute. What are some practical tips that you might be able to give our listeners, Baha, about how you stay abreast of what's going on?
Well, I want to add one quick technology plug to Google. Google News has an alert mechanism that you should, every entrepreneur or anybody who is a professional that want to keep up with a specific topic in the industry, you could just keep up a couple of alerts and an email anytime that there's something new in that industry or in that topic, an email will be generated to you. So you're always ahead of the game, at least when you're looking at your competitors and so forth. But in general, you also have to use the listening part to learn from the industry giants. There's seminars, there's a lot of conferences in our industry, and trying to keep tap on that and being able to move with the industry but yet even stay ahead of the curve is really important. But at the same time, you don't want to overdo it where your users are overwhelmed with additional changes every day and they can't keep up with the application. So you want to have to simplify this maze, the healthcare and the healthcare regulations, and kind of dump, I want to use the simplifying aspect of it where the users still navigate it and not suffer through that whole process. I'd rather actually us take that challenge and go through the suffering of understanding and being able to be ahead of the curve versus our users where they can just simply use an elegant, simple-to-use application.
Yeah, Stuart, how do you keep abreast of the things that are going on?
I mean, I think he's right on topic there. The only other thing I would add would be listening to your customers as much as possible. A lot of times I think I'm on top of everything that's going on in the industry, and I know exactly where I need to go, but then I'll go meet with the customer or even just watch a doctor operate, meet with the patients, whatever it may be, and I'll realize, wow, this has changed. There's something new here. I need to evaluate what this is and what this means to me in my business.
Yeah, so and kind of following up to this idea of staying on top always innovating, talk to us, Stuart, a little bit about what are some of the emerging projects and product enhancements or however you term that within your organization that are going to be on the horizon in the next 12 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think the really exciting opportunity exists in the simple idea that you can customize patient care to that specific patient. So instead of talking about, we'll take a heart for an example, instead of talking about a heart in the generic term, let's talk about your heart and the specifics. Mm-hmm. And so no longer saying you have a problem with a vessel in your heart. Let's say this is the specific place where you have a problem. And in doing so, it really empowers the patient to understand his or her body. And I think that's a really powerful, it's a simple but powerful concept mm-hmm. that we're really going towards now. To the earlier point that was made, you can't go there right away because it's super complicated of a concept and there's some change management you got to get into. And so the first thing you got to do is you got to start getting people used to using different types of technology, get that technology in a ubiquitous state, and then from there you drive gradual change. You know, we could go a million miles in front of where the technology is today, but that wouldn't help anybody because there's this big technology hurdle you have to overcome. And so there's a big roadmap we have, but also we got to focus on the day-to-day adoption of these new technologies.
Yeah. Before, Baha, you give us your answer, I'm just curious, you know, it's the holidays, and so my family, my mom is here. And the other thing that I sort of think about, and we see it every day, is, you know, digital natives and younger generation, it's just assumed that they're going to use technology sometimes rather than voice. And then you have, you know, senior citizens who are using technology and maybe familiar with it, but certainly are not as savvy. How do you develop, really both of you, products so that, you know, you span that generation, or are you focused at a particular profile or set of customers?
Yeah, I mean, it's an inherent contradiction, isn't it? Because technology is all about being 15, 20, 21 years old, yet the majority of 21-year-olds are very, very healthy and don't really have anything to worry about. And so what we have to do is manage that level of sophistication. What I would say in the world that I operate in that's pretty exciting is tablet technology, where it's a touchscreen technology, is really, really intuitive. And we've done some pretty successful trials funded by the CDC and a few other groups around that concept. And what you find is, although you have low expectations about a 85-year-old with diabetes understanding technology or understanding how to use a tablet, actually what we've seen is not that much of a learning curve problem. Mm. So it's been a surprise to us.
I would imagine, because that person maybe is vested in trying to find the answer, so the motivation is different than necessarily learning Facebook or Twitter or mm-hmm. Instagram. So you got a little bit more motivation there.
But I want to add that actually Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and iPhones, they help the adoption level. Now seniors, my mother, who's 76, sends me an email. So I've never thought that was going to happen, but she does that, and she does that more frequent than I thought she would. And that helps. So now she's not as intimidated by that technology, just being able to use it. It gives her, if she knew that her lab results online, mm-hmm. she'll be just as anxious to go check her results to see if they are within the range that they should be in, just as much as getting an email from her son.
Yeah.
So, and mobility has improved that behavior tremendously. Most senior, I'm surprised by the amount of people who are 65 and above that have an iPhone or an Android and able to interact with it just as intelligently as the younger generation. And actually, I've seen some of them using apps that I never thought, you know, somebody of that age would be using. But it's interesting to see that drift. And it's moving faster than what we think.
Yeah, I think new industries are all about the adoption curve. And adoption curves in the 80s were much flatter or took longer for people to adopt mainstream technology. But today what you're seeing is a much steeper and more rapid adoption curve. And I think it's thanks to products like the iPhone or what have you.
Yeah. Baha, so wait till you get a text from her. So tell us a little bit, kind of asking that same question that I asked Stuart, in the next 12 months or so, what's on the horizon?
Well, Azalea Health right now is focused in meeting government regulations. In our industry, there is something called meaningful use, stage one and stage two, and we're in the middle of stage two to certify our software with Medicare.
What is meaningful use? Just for
it's actually basically meaningful use is where the government is paying the provider money to use electronic health record.
Okay.
Now, for the provider to receive that money, they'll have to use a system that is certified as meaningful use system that meets certain criteria. But beyond the governmental needs and the regulation needs, we're working actually to engage with the patient more with the provider. So we want to enable tools like telemedicine within our patient portal and our electronic health record where the physician can real-time chat and real-time video chat with the patient. That engagement level will keep the patient from repeating coming back to the physician office. As the healthcare moving from a transactional-based system to an outcome-driven, in the future, providers going to get paid more by seeing less sick patients. Actually, they're going to be get paid more for keeping their patient population healthier, and technology going to play a huge role to engaging the patient with their population, with their health, and with the provider themselves. So we're looking forward to develop tools for telemedicine, also mobility, mobile applications are easier to adopt, easier to use. So we look forward to continue. We released our first version of our Azalea M, which for mobile, and we look forward to add additional features and functions to our mobility platform.
Yeah. So I would imagine for both of you, you have to engage in strategic alliance and partnerships. That's something that we talk to a lot of our guests about. So how do you find the right strategic partners? Is there sort of a formula there or a criteria, or is it really much more organic and episodic?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. That's something that is really, really important as a young company to figure out the right partners. You know, if you choose the wrong partner, you can go down a rabbit hole and never come back out of it. For me, what it's been about is the relationship and the trust that you develop over time with these potential partners. I don't like to partner too quickly with the partners we do have, but rather I like to develop some sort of relationship, and at the end of that relationship or as that relationship grows, then look towards firm up a partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you always want to ask the question why. You know, why would we want to partner? And if so, and I use this term constantly with our partners, let's date before we get married. let's try a deal or two. Let's try a concept or two, or a customer mainly. If a customer drives a partnership because they're using a piece of software and they would like it to be integrated within our application, that speeds up that dating process tremendously. But I believe I don't know if there's a simple formula for that. Sometimes as entrepreneurs, we have to make mistakes. I personally made a few mistakes in partnerships as well before. We partnered with companies, they end up not up to par where we want them to be. You know, sometimes the disengagement is a little bit painful, but as entrepreneurs, if we do everything by the book and we don't take risk and we don't make mistakes, it'll become a job and it'll become boring.
So kind of to that point of when there might be challenges, without naming the partner or the exact situation, can maybe both of you share an example of maybe a partnership or something within a partnership that didn't quite go the way you wanted it to? And then what'd you learn from that? Because I think that's what's important as an entrepreneur. You got to be taking those lessons into the next thing. You can't just sort of fold up your tent and go home.
We have a really good example. When we started the company, Azalea Health, we started development on the financial piece, and we left the clinical piece to partners. So we were doing the revenue cycle management, the billing, and be able, and we had a billing system. So we felt like, let's focus on that while we're utilizing other companies' electronic health records. And in that, we realized that, you know, the companies are not up to par with the quality of the product that they provide, and we tried multiple ones. But that resulted in us building our own electronic health record and actually developing one that is far superior than those partners were able to provide. And also, as an integrated both financial and clinical system, it was it's working a lot more smoother and a lot more easier to use for our providers and our software users. So it kind of worked out really well to our advantage.
Right. So for your partnership, what you saw was it gave you entree to think about other things within
sure.
the market. So Stuart, can you maybe choose a partnership that maybe didn't go exactly like you thought?
Yeah. And I think it's probably apropos for both partnerships and for our customers. We had a relationship with a large pharmaceutical company, and it was going to be a long-term relationship. And what happened actually was the executive in charge of that division ended up moving on. And what we found is we were left out to dry because our relationship was with the human capital and not necessarily with the corporation. And there are pros to cons mm-hmm. with both, but I think it's important to recognize, and one thing that we now recognize is you need to have the relationship with the human in that position. And then that relationship, if they move or they leave, then you can keep that relationship. But you also need to have a corporate-level relationship as well. And so I think you really got to attack partnerships and focus partnerships on both types of relationships.
Yeah. Sort of embedded in your response when you were talking about that, I was also thinking about how do you get your message out? How do you build awareness, particularly for a young organization, but one that's in a space that's very much emerging? So, Stuart, what are some of your strategies that you're using?
I keep shouting until people listen.
I see.
I think the reality is credibility with these partnerships that we're talking about is hugely important. You know, I have credibility as an individual. So, my co-founders have credibility as individuals, but sometimes that's not even enough to get the attention of these large organizations you're trying to partner with. And so by default, the credibility you establish by partnering with these nationally renowned organizations goes a long way to have that conversation and create the trust level that's really required to create a new industry, to have people listen to you and to understand that this is not only a potential, this is a must-have in the future.
How is Azealia Health building that awareness and getting its name out there?
We utilize multiple channels from online marketing and being able to exhibit in healthcare shows and also showing up. Sometimes Woody Allen says 90% of success is showing up. So we try as a company to constantly get involved in a lot of events, a lot of especially when it's related to our industry. And our partners, our users, our business, the other businesses also, they see the passion that we have for our business. And that translates always to other engagements and other businesses. And also sometimes it's not always about business. We get involved in community things. We get involved in educational things as well because we're looking at the future generations who are going to be our future programmers and our future health IT professionals. So we have to start early on now to get engaged with high schools and middle schools to see what other programs that they can develop to help us in the future. And that helps us in general because those people also go to doctors. So it's in multi-level engagement process, and marketing is an essential one of those things, being on the radio with you, Michelle.
Always happy to help. In doing a little bit of research about both of your organizations, you've each received some level of awards in just your short time of being in business. And I'm wondering, how does that play in? We were talking about culture and keeping people excited. Talk to us a little bit. I understand, Stuart, you were Atlanta Intel, one of the four finalists for Atlanta's Intel Innovation Award. So what was that like, and even why did you all go up, you know, for the award?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really a testament to my team more so than anything else. I spend a lot of time out there talking to our customers and trying to figure out where we're moving strategically, and our team is down in the day-to-day operations building great products. And so that's really what I was focused on when we applied for that award, is the fact that my team is doing some really innovative stuff in healthcare. And not only do we think it might have a nice financial outcome for us, but maybe more importantly, or depending on who you ask, more importantly, I think we can really alter population health as a whole. And so that, you know, for us, that award is all about the team and also all about the fact that we think we can really drive change from a population level point of view.
And I see Azalea Health has had a number of different successes. One was in Inc. Magazine's 500, 5,000 list. You're on the, one of the fastest growing private companies. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. It really, as a company, it gives us the credibility that we're doing something right. And also it gives us, you know, we're constantly, as entrepreneurs and as employees and as leaders, we look for those marks where we accomplished A, accomplished B, and kind of check them off. And being able to get a lot of those rewards, it's very important to the rest of the team, more than the CEO or the CFO or the CIO. It's more really for the rest of the company that our leadership is doing something right. Also, you know, we're day-to-day, like Stuart mentioned, we're just working really hard to please our clients, please our employees and our business partners. And it's be nice every once in a while to look back and say, okay, we won this. We as I mentioned, it gives us a good credibility within our community as well, who has a lot of faith in what we're doing.
The awards we win, I think, are really byproducts of what we're focused on. And so it is a great recognition for our team, but it's a little bit like we have this mission that we're focused on. And as an outcome of those missions that we're accomplishing, you get recognized. And so,
yeah, so for those emerging CEOs that are out there and they're listening, let's. I like this idea of sort of coach on call, coach in the moment. So if you were going to give some advice to a new CEO, someone that was getting ready to start an organization, you could give them just one thing that has been particularly helpful for you. You know, what's that one piece of advice that you would give?
Choose your partners and your high-level employees very, very carefully, because those are the ones, the people who are going to make you or break you, especially at the early on stage. Your initial recruitment of who you're going to be, your top five, top 10 executive team members, is critical to your success. As a CEO, you can't do everything, but you have to trust people that can do the job for you better than you could. And initially, that is very, very important.
Absolutely. And the only thing I would add to that is also, I think your support system is very important, whether it's, in my case, my wife and my close immediate family, whomever it is that's in your support system. Have the honest conversation with them ahead of time and say, this is going to be tough, it's going to be stressful, but I think it's going to be really rewarding, and I think we're going to come out from the better on the back end of this. And you got to have that buy-in to be an entrepreneur, or else you're going to be going alone, and that's a scary place to be.
So you must be in my head, because my next question was going to be, what would you tell that budding entrepreneur, what they have to do to get ready personally to be able to have that stamina and that drive and that vision to go forward? So you shared a little bit, but is there anything else that, as you look back, something that you did to really prepare yourself to be in this role?
That's a great question. I did have a seminal moment, I guess you could say, where I said, hey, I'm going to start this new company, and this is how we're going to do it. And leading up to that, I spent a lot of time thinking about it. And the reality is, it's just like anything else, the planning aspect of starting a new company is really, really critically important, or else you're going to get in there and not know where you're going. And so you got to really spend the due diligence, if you will, the months leading up to whatever you're trying to launch. And for every minute you spend thinking about it and planning ahead of time, you're going to be well rewarded on the back end when you do step out on your own.
Yeah, one thing that I always mention, I came from a 9-to-6 job, or 8-to-5, it depends on what you want to call it. And if you're an entrepreneur and a CEO, you can kiss that bye-bye. There is no time limit when things start and things end. So you're always thinking about the business. You're constantly looking, especially as you add more customers, more employees, more personnel, more partnerships, more, the more you do, the more you want to communicate, and you always feel that you know, it's not something you just go home and turn off at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. So be ready for that. It's exciting. It's a good ride. It's a wild one sometimes, but that's what entrepreneurs do, that you have to sacrifice. And like Stuart mentioned, you need to have that discussion with your family, with your significant others, to make sure that they're also ready for you not to be around as much.
Yeah, and I guess one thing you touched on earlier, the co-founders. You know, I'm lucky enough to have great co-founders who are as passionate as I am about what we're doing. And that's another angle on the support system before you actually get started with this company. If you're lucky enough to have a couple co-founders that are dedicated like you are, then that makes it a lot easier as well.
Yeah. So it's hard to believe, but we're here in the holiday season. And before you know it, it's going to be January 2014. And so one of the things that I hear from my listeners is they're thinking about how to get a fast start to whatever it is that they're trying to do in 2014. So as you are thinking about 2014 and that first quarter, is there something in particular that is either a big challenge you're trying to resolve or an opportunity that you are trying to seize?
Yeah, it's always a beginning of the year. It's like it's the reset button on a lot of things that you want to take off starting January 1st, 2014. My advice, always write it down to make sure it kind of be in your mind. The more you think about it, the more likely it is it's going to happen for you. This year, I'm actually going to do a lot more health wise, where I go exercise, do more of that myself. So I even started early, a couple of months earlier before that. But I'm reminding myself on a daily basis that, you know, so I can, it can be always on in the forefront. So whatever it is that anybody wants to do, just make sure you document it, you write it as many times as you want to, keep thinking about it and keep reminding yourself.
Yeah, practice.
Practice.
Exactly. I think for me, I'm always excited about the holiday season, but one of the reasons I get really excited is because I know there's going to be a little bit of relative downtime where I can really sit there, like he said, write it down. Sit down and really think about what we've accomplished this year, which it's been a heck of a lot, but also think about what are the priorities to start off 2014 correctly. You know, I sort of funny story here. When I came out of college, I went up to New York City and I was working, and a lot of people would take a lot of their vacation days around the holiday time. And I said, no, I want to be in the office because I want to spend time in the office thinking about what next year is going to bring. And so I think taking some downtime and evaluating where you are and writing down what your goals and objectives are really will lead to a fast start for the next year.
Absolutely. And it's also a good time now in the healthcare industry, and your parents will attest for that. December is a slow month in general. People take on. So it's a good time to get engaged with your team and have more, you know, us time rather than us and the customers and the client and the users. And so that can calibrate us and be able to kind of launch us again in 2014 with a new energy level.
It's funny that you say that, because that's for us a little bit of a yes and a no. It's a slow month in some places, but then in our ER partners,
indeed, yeah.
It's difficult to get a lot of attention there. So it's a slow month for us because they are busy fighting the flu.
Yeah,
usually.
Yeah. Well, let's hope none of us have to battle that. But I think those are good reminders. I take this holiday season as well to spend some time reflecting on where I want to go. And one of the things I tell my clients is, as you're thinking about that plan, what's that indicator of success? So if this is your goal, being able to have not only the quantifiable, whether that's revenue, profit, you know, what number of customers, but it's also what are some of those intangible things that are those indicators that says we're on the right track. It's hard to kind of figure out how you measure morale, or it's hard to sometimes figure out initiative with your employees. But can you name what also some of those indicators sort of look like? That's also a good thing, because I think a lot of times we just focus so much on the quantitative measurable thing that we don't always think about. What are those things that must surround it for us all to be? Well, this has been a great learning experience for me, and I've really been interested in the insights that both of you have shared. So I'm going to give you just a moment or two to let all of our listeners know how they can learn more about your products and more about your organization. So, Stuart, I'll start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the time here, first of all. It's been a wonderful conversation. You can learn more about Bioscape at www.bioscapedigital.com. And you can also call us direct 678-279-5841.
Great.
Thank you, Michelle, again for having us today. It has been a really great experience, and you're a great host to make things a lot easier.
Thank you.
Our website is azaliahealth.com, and it's you'll be able to learn a lot more about our products and be able to get engaged with our services. We hope that we can see somebody on our website, azaliahealth.com.
Absolutely. Well, we're right here in the day after Thanksgiving. And so hopefully we're all feeling that gratitude of this time of the year and thankful for all our blessings. So I just say to our listeners, I hope that this has been a blessed holiday. And we're getting ready for, you know, that fast December that quickly gets us to the beginning of the year. And so join us each Friday at 10 for another Growth Matters show where we talk about Let's talk about it, because
growth matters.